This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Kinetics. From driver all the way to putter, Kinetics utilizes a proprietary vacuum curing process to maximize performance at the fiber level. Visit PattersonShafts.com to learn more.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can still find me on Twitter at CanadanGolf. And with me today I'm not sure how many times this is now. However, I had to get him on here because there are huge things we need to talk about. His name is James Miles. He writes a thing or two for THP, the Hacker's Paradise. You can find him on Twitter at JMan_THP. James, hello, my friend, and welcome.
Well, hello, brother. How are you?
I am good. It is a couple days post-Masters, and what a thrill that weekend was. Did you get a chance to watch?
I did. I actually didn't get to watch as much as I usually do, but I finally got I got enough honeydew stuff done that by Sunday I was able to kind of lock down and really watch all day Sunday. It was nice.
Here's the real question. The last Masters we had was only in November. We have officially been spoiled by two in such close proximity to one another. Are you prepared to wait over 350 days for the next one?
No, but you give me an open championship and I'll survive.
And there's an Olympics and there's like another thing and then maybe a Ryder Cup and blah, 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 blah. Anyways, I saw on the forum today, there was chatter about what is the second best major with the assumption that the Masters is the very top, tippity top of the iceberg. Do you agree with that or not?
Masters is number two for me, which I know is blasphemous to so many. I'm an open championship geek. I'm the dude who wakes up at least the first 2 days at 1 a.m. or whatever to watch tee shots go off as live as we get them. I don't know why. I guess it's where I live and the type of golf with the wind and everything. Like I love the open championship. So
that's at JMan_THP on Twitter.
Bring it.
You say wake up for, I say stay awake for. So we're in different realms of the world, I suppose. I do want to talk an awful lot about the Masters this year. There was some incredible stuff that happened. We obviously have a brand new champion, not just of the Masters, but a huge story that Hideki wins the very first green jacket for Japan. How do you feel about that? I mean, that has to be such an unbelievable weight off his shoulders.
Well, yeah, I mean, on the personal side of things, because we've gotten lost in a lot of the stuff with like Tony and talking about him and how close, but think about Hideki and how close he really has been, like time and time again. Beyond that, man, he wins. Yes, that's a big win for him. It's a big win for Japan, but like golf wins again. Think about it. Think about all this chaos and the amount of play that we're seeing in sales and everything else. And now you take that market that now has this, well, let's be honest, he's going to be a hero and live on in legend forever. Like that's not even making that up. That's the reality of it. And it's just going to pour more fuel in the fire of golf and what golf is worldwide. I dig it.
Do you think there are comparisons to someone like Andy Murray, who is kind of stuck on that Wimbledon grind for forever, in the way that Hideki was anticipated to win a major? Do you think there are any parallels there for them?
I mean, I think, yeah, there's some. We can always make some of those parallels to things. It's just, well, actually a lot more now that I think about it, because I always considered them kind of both in the same thing. It was always, well, it's going to happen. You know, it's got to happen. It has to. It's with Hideki, he's built for majors. He really is. He's built for majors.
Do you think this kickstarts some serious competitiveness from him moving forward in the majors? Do you think this opens the door for him in terms of relevancy, or does this seem more of like a, hey, he got it, that's great, we'll see what happens at the next one?
I think it would be unfair, knowing the things. I mean, he was on a plane and overseas almost immediately. Like, and he does have a home in Windermere, I believe. So I think it would be unfair for us to sit here and be like, well, let's see what he does in the next three majors this year and everything else. I think you've got to give him some leeway, because you take the amount of press and stuff that happens to somebody who wins here, and now you multiply it. Like, did you see any of the images of the newspapers in Japan the day after?
No.
One of the newspapers actually had every single hole, all 72, and on each part of it, every single shot was played out. It was like diagrammed.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that nothing like that's going to happen here.
I heard some commentary about how the excitement in Japan was not simply golfers, golf fans. It was like everyone. And I think that's super cool, man. I think we kind of take for granted, and I say we, I'm sitting over here going, let's go Corey Connors and Mac Hughes, you know, but I feel a part of the American ship at this point. And, obviously we're cheering for our guys, especially when they go overseas to your major, the Open Championship. You have that sense of pride, and it has to be such an unbelievable experience for a group like them to watch, tune in, and see the history be made, essentially.
I mean, there's some really cool stuff, like the newspaper thing. Listening to their broadcast team whenever he made the final putt, it was like, that's like, you have no idea what's being said, but it's awesome. I mean, but like from a cultural perspective too, like after he won, you could see, like, culturally speaking, he's still trying to keep his calm. Mm-hmm. Like, he almost lost it. He almost totally lost it. And you could see it, and you could see the emotion, but at the same time, he's trying to, you know, there's these cultural norms and everything that go with it. There's so much at play in all of this that it's just, I don't know. It's a cool story. At the beginning of the week, if you'd have told me Hideki was going to win, I'd have been like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But as it went on, and as the week went on, like, by the end of it, I was like, heck yeah, man. Like, that's awesome. Like, that's a story. That's a moment. That's a moment in history. It is. It's a moment in history.
The greatest rain delay of his life, basically, is what happened.
That's a fact. That is a fact.
You know, I was having a good laugh at the commentary, and not because I had no idea what they were saying, and it was really fun following the emotion. I was laughing because I wondered, when Weir won it way back in the day, did they cut to the Canadian broadcast and an episode of Letterkenny broke out for everyone to listen to?
I would be all there for that. Yes.
Well, did you see that Corey Connors, who was in the mix there for a long time, his hole in one was honored in Listowel, Ontario. The local Tim Hortons made a donut out of it.
Yeah, I saw that. I was all over my social media feed. Yeah.
The most Canadian thing that ever happened. I'd hate to think what would have to happen on tour to get your own poutine made out of for you. Oh, man. You know what I like, though? There were so many good storylines to come out of this. I mean, you had the return of Spieth, which had at least Texas overly excited to watch a Masters. You had guys like Connors representing Canada. You had, a handful of guys. You had Brooks coming off of injury, who had no business being out there taking a chance. You had Rose putting on a show for a while out there. You got Happy Gilmore's caddy, Zalatoris, letting people know that he is very much relevant in these sorts of things. How many different storylines would have worked out at the end, and how great is that for the game of golf?
I mean, we've had some. It's everything that I think the true golf fan wants in a major, because we don't like to see runaways unless it's Tiger, apparently. We don't like to see runaways. So you want competition and you want options, but, like, man, there's some cool stuff. And like the Zalatoris story to me is just, it's fascinating. The way he's gone about his business and what he's done and how he's doing it. And for him to play for 4 days, and I personally love the comment that he basically said, I'm just too dumb to know any better. Like, that's fantastic.
That's about as you as they get, isn't it?
it's accurate. I relate it too much.
Let me ask you a question. If Zalatoris and Sandler don't play in a pro-am together soon, and I mean like in the next year, are we wasting a golden opportunity?
Somebody in some PR place somewhere for marketing needs to be fired. like, but here's the thing. Like, honestly, if it was the European Tour, they would be all over that.
Oh yeah.
Do you think the PGA is going to do it? We could go down a rabbit hole on that. I don't know that they'll realize it.
I really hope they do, because that was fun. Sandler got into it on social. Zalatoris went right back with it. Super fun to follow along with that. And it's nice because you're getting people once again outside of the game who wouldn't normally follow along. Like, wait, what are they talking about? Is this real? Like, sure, bud. It's totally real. How many years ago was that movie made?
Oh, God.
That kid's got grandkids now. How horrifying is that? We are getting old, my friend.
I know. Well, at a tournament today, I brought up Happy Gilmore, and I had to ask the kid. I was like, you know what I'm talking about, right? And like, my kid's like, yes, coach, I got you. I'm like, okay.
So they did the assigned watching. That's great. I want to touch on, I definitely want to hear more about your coaching, but I do want to touch on one thing that really stood out to me. I posted on social. I would imagine anyone who's even sort of conscious of it posted it or responded or reacted to it on social. It was a really subtle move done by Hideki's caddy at the end of 18. He grabbed the flag from the flagpole, put the flagpole back in, and then a very subtle but respectful bow to Augusta. How did that hit you?
Way more emotionally than I expected to. I mean, because it wasn't done for a show. Like, there was no intent with it. He didn't have any idea that all the cameras would be on him for it. It was a nod to, I mean, a match, a week, well played, at a course that everybody in golf adores, right? Like, that was raw. Like, and culturally speaking, again, like, that's just so cool.
I don't normally get to... Oh, certainly not political on the show. I definitely don't want to do that. But we have trends that are flowing throughout the country, and you know, social media is no safe haven for anyone who wants a super respectful time 100% of the time. But I've been very guilty of putting players on blast for getting overly emotional, shouting, slamming, throwing, anything that just doesn't, it's kind of puts me off a little bit. And people, they come at me for it. They say, why does it need to be that way? You're living in the past, you know, give it a rest. They're human beings. I think that bow represents a lot of what my perspective is on the game of golf. I think we are fortunate enough to play on hallowed ground once in a while, certainly not Augusta. But I see no reason why that sort of trend couldn't continue of just genuinely respecting the position you're in. And I thought that was a beautiful representation of what could be. And I think what should be in terms of how they present themselves out there. You think that's unfair?
No, I don't think it's unfair. I think it's, man, that's one of those topics and things that there's such a balance to it. Like, I get both edges of it, and me and the coaching side of it, like, it's hard whenever you see a bunch of guys on TV, like, yes, the camera's on them all the time. We know that. We've talked about that. We saw what happened with JT. We know all these things. The camera's on them all the time, so they catch every little thing. But, like, I'm coaching kids that start reacting the same way. I mean, when I coached football, it was the same way. They mimicked Deion Sanders and all these. Like, it's just the way it is. So you've got to be cognizant of what's going on with it. And I think there has to be, you got to balance the fire with the, man, it's just really cool that I get to do what I do for a living. And ironically, talking about the Masters, you know who's won me over that way more than anybody? And you, as like my best friend on the planet, know, Bubba Watson. My feelings of Bubba Watson have been very out there. I have never been a Bubba fan, but like every time the Masters and something comes around, he wins me over a little more, because the one thing you cannot say about him is how much he absolutely adores the game and respects everything that goes with it. And I think there needs to be more of that. I think that's fair.
I love that Bubba's there at all the big moments, respects the process. I know that he's caught in some grief for his engagements with his caddy in the past, but he also has a lot of fun with him, and I don't think that's captured enough. I remember there's a video out there joking around about how his caddy gave him the perfect number and he hits the shot And he's like, be the right club, Teddy, be the right club. And it hits the green about 2 feet from the cup, spins off just a little bit. And then he looks over his caddy. He goes, yeah, that was all me, and starts walking away. You know, I think we need to respect in conditions like that, that there are player caddy relationships that we won't even begin to understand. And I don't think they're going to open that door to explain it until they write their book 20 years down the line. you know, you see different versions of that. Maybe Greller's book looks a little bit different. Maybe, you know, Hideki's caddy's book looks a little different as well. It's hard to say.
I mean, I don't know. It was a heck of a week. And even dealing with all the Jordan fanboys, which, I mean, I went from rooting for Jordan to being like, okay, maybe I'm not rooting for Jordan so much. Right. And that sounds terrible. And that, go ahead. We can direct him at my social media again. It's JMan_THP on all your media outlets, but it's the reality of it. And that's kind of what we fall back in. It circles back to the conversation, like how you act and how you carry yourself emotionally, your mannerisms and everything else with it. Why can't there be some balance to it? Like, I get being emotional. Like, believe me, I understand it, but like seeing Hideki's caddy do that, it's a moment of levity. And I'm not expecting everybody whose caddy wins to go out and bow to the course. That's not what we're saying here. But respect what happened, right? Respect the fight, respect the journey, and embrace it and realize that the world's watching. And that's really cool.
What did you think of Horschel's immediate response to his actions?
I mean, I'm not surprised that his immediate response was that in the world that we're in right now, right? I mean, that was a tantrum for all tantrums. And I like Billy Ho. And it went from I went from seeing it and being like, okay, to like, oh. And then you circle back around to being kind of impressed. Like, it's the authority going into all this, going through the bag. But yeah, I mean, I think he did what he knew he needed to do. I don't know. Is anybody really going to pay that much mind to Billy Horschel for throwing a fit? I don't know. If it's JT doing that, then yeah, I mean, here we go. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Does that fall into the category of Billy's fiery, right? Isn't that the word that we keep hearing?
Yeah, I could do without fiery, although I got a hat tip. I know I've been one of his biggest critics. I got a hat tip. Our guy, new dad, John Rahm, this week for kind of just being in the moment and saying, you know what, hell with it. I'm not changing diapers. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was interesting. Like, there's 100 storylines. It was a good week.
There are two guys I still want to talk about. The one I think is really interesting because people immediately reacted to it based on the fact they didn't tear up Augusta the way he'd hoped. And that is Bryson. I think he's getting a lot more heat than he should from one golf tournament. I think he's proven that winning is distance is a very logical way of winning a golf tournament. He did that in a major already. My perspective is he either needs to pick his spots better in Augusta, or Augusta just doesn't suit his eye, you know? And I mean, we're all guilty of having courses that are like that.
I mean, I had a problem with, like, it turned into some of the commentary, like, turning into just straight up, well, Bryson said it's a par 67 for him. I don't think he was wrong there. I think
those guys hit on 13 over and over and over again. How many guys lay up on 13? How many guys have a mid to, you know, 5 or 6 iron into that green? There are places on that golf course that could easily be cut strokes.
And that's my thing with it. Like, no, I don't think he was wrong by saying that. I think it probably is a par 67 for him. He's just played like crap at times.
It's true.
So what's wrong with that? I'm of the camp that, like, I think he wins the Masters at some point in the next couple of years. And I think when he does it, I think he wins big. Because I think your first point is more in tune. If he can get the correct lines, like the correct lines, and not lost in the moment of it all, like, hit that power and we get lost in the distance. The distance isn't the biggest thing, dude. The dude hits the ball so stinking high.
Yep.
Like, none of all that stuff. What are they going to do? Are they going to go plant even bigger trees somewhere? They can't.
Well, I think The biggest beef that's always been with Bryson is short game, right? And that doesn't include putter. He's been an outstanding putter when he wins. Mm-hmm. I think the issue is his wedge game. And I think maybe they sit back and say, maybe it's not all go, go, go. Maybe these lines don't work for us. I mean, you saw what happened to him on 11 a couple of days. He was wayward right. And, you know, maybe just blasting a hybrid or fairway down the middle, 300, whatever number is after the bounce. Maybe that's enough. Because then he can work his, you know, 7-iron into the green from 220, which is fine.
And we all know, like with Augusta, those green complexes are gnarly. Like that's the defense now, and it always is, and it should be.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, if you're just barely on the wrong side of something there, like I don't even want to think about how fast some of those are.
Here's the other guy I want to talk to you about, and this is he's starting to have a little scar tissue at Augusta. After 2 years of almost kind of sort of not getting it done, Xander, do you think he can mentally go back out there and play free and win one? Or do you think this is going to start haunting him the way that number 12 haunted Spieth for a couple years?
No, I think he's unfazed.
You think so?
That's strictly my perception, right? I don't know Xander. But like the way he carries himself, the way he goes about things and everything we hear from other players when they talk about him, the guys that are at the club with him and everything else, like I honestly don't think it bothers him as much. It's kind of like I still don't think that Tony's bothered as much as some other people are by things. I think those dudes know what they do and believe it's going to happen. Now, Spieth on 12 is like that's seeing ghosts, right? Like, yeah. I mean, it is. It's seeing ghosts. And I would make the argument, too. We could say the same thing about Rory. I think Rory walks on the ground still, and he sees ghosts.
On the first round anyway.
I don't know. Xander, for whatever reason with me, I just don't think he's – I don't think he's the kind that gets caught in that.
You know, it's hard to forget or it's easy to forget that he made four straight birdies down the stretch.
Yeah.
Just one lapse of judgment basically cost him all the pressure he needed to put on to Hideki on 16. And I don't know whether he's being truthful or not when he said he picked the right club, he hit the right shot, it just got caught up in the wind. That's up to him and whoever up there is listening to believe it or not. But, you know, it's so easy to miss the fact that as much as these are two losses for him at this point, I guess from a chase perspective, he was right there. It was 4 feet from being really right there. So I'm with you. I think he continues to challenge. I like his game. It's fun to watch, especially when he gets it going. But he's also not one of those, like, as you said, fiery guys. So of course I'm
well, and I mean, I like with that, I think though, for us, a lot of us now, like for me at least, like we've always been like, remember when Ricky went on his tears, right? That year where he was top five and everything. And everybody's like, oh yeah, he's fine. He's fine. It's going to happen. Well, maybe not. I mean, is this, that's like our generation versus Monty in the previous generation, right? Everybody just kept saying, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not reading enough into it. I don't know. Like,
well, for the last decade, I kept saying that Fred Couples was going to win another one. So I think I'm done making predictions at this point and just hoping for the best.
That's fair.
There's one other thing we could talk about at the Masters. I don't think we're going to. It was the introductory bad decisions. I think we'll leave that to the social media speculation. And I actually want to kick it off. James, we were fortunate enough to be sponsored this month by Kinetics Golf Shafts. I know you've done some work with them, and I thought rather than just do a simple read, we could go through their zero torque putter shaft, which you've been working with quite a bit. Now that it's been in the bag, you've been toying with it a little bit. Is there any sort of insight you can give to people who are out there considering something like that?
I mean, so the big thing with Kinetics is obviously people learning about the brand and everything going with it. I was lucky enough, I got to work with the original tuned version, which was their first foray into the putter shafts where the grip is part of the actual shaft. And that's just, it's a little too abstract. So the zero torque falls more in line with a traditional looking putter shaft, and it kind of answers the bell for some of those other companies out there trying to create stable putter shafts. I mean, I've had it for 3 months now. And the reviews on the Hacker's Paradise, for those that are curious about that and checking it out. But it's, I mean, it's 118 grams. So it comes in similar to a standard putter shaft. The difference being the balance is slightly different. However, the overall weight makes the entire thing feel very similar. And it's like, I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's 0.2 degrees of torque is what this putter shaft has. The CPM rating is in the 400s for those who know what that means. I mean, this is, every putter shaft reviews are hard, but like, this is the one that I grabbed a hold of, and you do your like little waggle test with it and everything else. And you're like, oh yeah, it's stable. But then you start putting with it, and man, that thing is, it's there. Like, it's just, it is. And there's a lot to it. It looks more traditional now. It still has a little bit of show to it for the people like that, but I mean, it's a straight shaft putter, so you're going to need to be either playing an inner hosel design of some type. But the balance that it has combined with the overall, I don't want to say rigidity, cause that's not the right word for it, but to reuse the stability tune that goes with it, it's really cool. And it probably does it honestly the best of any of them that I've worked with. And that's not me just saying that, that's just the reality of rolling hundreds and hundreds of putts.
Well, you are certainly my go-to guy for putter information, whether I like it or not, even though Mallet March, hashtag Mallet March, didn't happen this year. For anyone who's out there curious about the shaft James is talking about, we've got some reviews over on the Hacker's Paradise, but we also have an easy link, www.pattersonshafts.com, or you can hit me up on social. I'll definitely get you a link over there. Take a look at what it means. Obviously, James has seen plenty of variety, and if he speaks this highly of it, it's definitely something you should check out for yourself. But while we're on putters, James, you had made some significant claims early in this year, ignoring the part where you are a massive club hoe. You are the clubbiest hoe that ever club hoed.
I'm pretty close.
Or one of them. You made a claim that you would be a one putter guy for all of 2021. You don't call it a mallet. You call it like a compact player's lie.
Compact player's mallet. Yes.
Yeah. Is that still a thing? Is that still happening?
It is. The Mizuno M-Craft V is still in the bag, man. It's still rolling strong. I actually went through a little tune-up fitting not too long ago, and lo and behold, it was pretty much ideal for my putting stroke, which was hilarious. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. My high school kids want to steal it because it's blue and pretty. but the only time I've not had it in the bag was anytime I'm working on a review for something else. So like the Zero Torque we talked about is in a different head. But other than that, I'd say 95% of my rounds have been played with it in the bag so far. So
I hardly believe it. We need to talk a little bit about your club champion experience, because I've done Sam, you've done it now. I'm really excited. How long has the club champion location been open near you?
I believe a couple of years now. Okay. I'm not exactly sure, cause I don't go to Oklahoma City all the time, but it's either been 2 or 3 years.
Okay. And you worked with a guy over there who is super fun and definitely worth the time if anyone's looking for fitting over there.
Yeah, no, their crew is really, really good. They've got two guys that are running house over there, and they kind of hit the gamut of everything that you could possibly want. So, I mean, I worked with Jacob Prentice, which the cool thing about that, little did I know, Jacob was playing high school golf when I first started coaching high school golf.
God,
and
you're old.
And he happened to win the whole thing in our biggest class as an individual. So that was pretty cool. He's the one that put me through my SAM lab fitting. And those guys were really, really down to earth about it all. And the nice thing was, yeah, it was a putter fitting for spec and everything else with it, but he happens to have basically the same putting stroke that I do, faults and all. So it turned into like I think your experiences at Club Champion are similar. Like, it turned into fitting slash also just kind of learning more about what you can do as a golfer. And I dig that.
So Sam as a whole, obviously is tough to digest if you're just there messing around by yourself. Is something like that, with that much information being portrayed, the type of stroke you have, the speed at which you're doing, the consistency, the open, close, shut, up, down, left, right, you know, everything about a putting stroke is magnified by this system. Is this something that you think every golfer would benefit from, or do you think it'd take someone like you to really enjoy it?
No, I think everybody can benefit from it, providing they have the correct person putting them through the paces. Like, it's not something that you're just going to go, like, I mean, you can go to a PGA Superstore or whatever else and go bash balls on a foresight and see your numbers and go through whatever else, and they'll let you do whatever. But like with SAMLab, you need somebody to be able to get you to understand and digest the numbers, especially, you know, tempo and face closure, because you may look at your path, I mean, and say, oh no, that's not a perfect arc, but not everybody's path has to be a perfect arc, right? We're worried about where, we're worried about impact. So the story is all useful information that you can digest if provided to you the right way. And that was the coolest thing. I mean, I've been lucky. I've been on SAM a few times. It had been a few years and I'd started questioning things. So this was the first time I'd done it with Club Champion, and it was cool before they knew what I did. You know, working with them and going through everything, and it was well done and well described, and that's the highest praise I can give on it.
I'm gonna make a comment here and tell me how much your teeth grit when I do it, okay?
Oh Lord,
I can't putt with that. I don't like the way it looks.
I mean, why would my teeth grit? It's kind of reality. That was one of the cool things about going into this, and I mean, talking to Jacob, and that's one of the, I asked him. I was like, you know, in putter fittings, what's the biggest thing that you see? And he said, if people don't like the way it looks, then it doesn't matter how good it performs for them on SAMLab. I can show them that it's giving them a perfect putting stroke, but if they can't stand to look at it, the majority of them aren't going to be able to do it. Which, interestingly enough, he actually held me over for another session. So a guy with a fitting came in, and like the dude went directly to the directed force putter, the gigantic directed force putters. And he was fit into it in like 12 minutes. And the dude had walked out the door with this putter, or like with this putter on order. And it was cool because it was case in point. Like that dude had seen it somewhere. He had held it. He liked the look of it. He could get over it and he could game it. Like I went over and grabbed one and tried to roll it. And I'm just like, I mean, I made everything, but it's like, I can't do it. So I think it's a fair thing. Now there's diminishing returns, right? If your stroke is of a certain type, like then a mallet is just going to fit it, and you may need to get over the idea of using a blade, right? If you have a certain flow to your stroke, then blades are always going to be more optimal in terms of what they can do as far as release through the putting stroke and general alignment goes. So I think it's a fine line to walk. I mean, I don't think it's a statement that's crazy. Like that one doesn't get me as fired up as some. I'll put it that way.
Do you think I'll ever be a mallet guy, James?
I never thought I would play a mallet. And I mean, it's no, am I using a giant number 10 or whatever? That's just, by the way, because if I could get a two ball 10 with a white hot OG insert in it, I probably would be using a number 10. But I never thought I would. I've been a blade guy for a long time now, all the way back to the Seymour MFGP. So I think with time it comes a balance to it. Now, does that mean I'm going to use a mallet forever after this year? No, but I have found it to be way more comfortable than I had talked all the crap about.
We need to talk. Speaking of talking crap, actually, it has nothing to do with that. I just felt like saying that because I haven't had enough chance to dig into you. So last time, or one of the last couple times I had you on, you shared some stories about your coaching right now. I think a lot of people out there know you are a high school golf coach. And I thought only fair for our audience, as you guys close in on the final portions of your season, I'd love to get an update on how things are going for you guys.
It's been a busy couple of weeks. I think we had, so I'm the varsity boys and girls coach in a 4A school in Oklahoma. So we're just above middle in size based on our classifications. This week I've got four tournaments. I've still got two more, based on when we were recording this. So it's been a little bit crazy, but it's actually turned into a really good year. The girls are senior laden. We knew it was going to be a potential for a good year, but we figured out over the last week, we're probably a solid number two in the class, with a chance to actually win the thing, since it's the state championship's going to be on our home course. The boys, we were fortunate and blessed by a move in that kind of reignited a fire, a young kid that can do a lot of stuff. And we had our best day today. It was actually my third lowest score in 7 years as the head coach. So things are in the right direction. I mean, it's interesting working with young kids because they love the gear aspect of it because they know what I do working with THP. So they get a little bit spoiled by some stuff, obviously. there's my 3-bag joke today is I threatened to throw his bag off of a bridge. And so he's like, well, coach, 90% of it's yours. I'm like, well, that's okay. That's fair. That's fair. But, no, it's the greatest thing ever for my golf game because the amount of patience that it's given me relationships that I have kids already coming back to come see me and go with it all. And it's cool to see the game grow in a different way. Building a program is one of the humblest and most humbling things that I've done, especially with the tradition that we have. So it's been good. I mean, it's chaos this time of year. It really eats into me as we hit release season with products and then we ramp up, but we're about 3 weeks from done now. So
I have a question as it relates to the girls golf team. And, and I guess this is more of like an overarching question based on the experiences you've had. Are you seeing significant distance gains from when you started coaching in the girls component to now?
At the top of the game, yes. And it's drastic. You have girls who've always been able to hit the ball a good number for them, but you also have a lot of these, the top amateurs, our top female amateur in the state that's committed locally here. And I mean, it's a different game. Like, it's intimidating for other girls on the tee box because I mean, it's this ultimate equalizer of what's going on with it. And I think it's the way that the coaching is now. And I'm not talking high school coaching. I'm talking actual personal swing coaching with these kids that are starting young. I mean, the swings are more aggressive. They're more athletic. I think there's more of an acceptance and a push towards coaching girls now in a similar fashion to the boys instead of differently, if that makes sense. And I'm not trying to get into that whole microcosm of discussion with it all, but it's the reality. All these young kids are being treated as athletes first now in this game. And I think that's what a lot of the older crowd is having a hard time seeing golf change. But at my phase and in my era, it is like they are athletes. They're athletes first.
How incredible is it to see some of these numbers that are coming out right now? Like I was watching the inspiration, the mm-hmm. ANA inspiration, and I'm going to butcher her name, and I'm so sorry for it, but I'm not good at names. Tava Tanakid, maybe it's perfect. She was averaging in her win 326 yards off the tee. Now, I looked up the year-long stats, and she's at like a 285-yard average, or maybe it's 283. I believe she's in second place on the tour. That is massive. I don't know more than a handful of guys who can hit it to 285, let alone 326. And we are talking about an LPGA that is taking it to the next level year over year. And that to me is an incredibly exciting thing.
Well, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago. We were talking about Lexi and like it's game changing distance and all this other stuff. But now you talk about, I mean, look at Ann Van Dam. Right. That's the other one. That was the first one that I realized. I want to say she's averaging like 283 right now this year. Like the amount of distance that is coming to the ladies game I'm curious to how they are going to evolve because their distance change from top to bottom. I could be wrong, but I feel like it is a bigger gap than within the men's game. So like okay. you saw it in the ANA a lot, like she kind of brought the course to its knees at times.
Yeah.
So are we going to have the same discussion with that? And why aren't we going to have the same discussion with that? Sure. Shouldn't we?
Like, well, I think it's awesome. I hope that Mike Wan, who's probably heard for the last, however many years he's been a part of the LPGA that please leave distance alone. You savages is basically what my understanding is the feedback has been. know, maybe that sort of understanding is there a little bit better now. But what I think I like the most about it, James, is you look at some of these ladies who are doing it, and I want to credit, obviously they're working in the off season on their physicality, but it's mechanics over so much of anything else. Like I'll defer it over to our side of things, like Zalatoris and Justin mm-hmm. Thomas, and a couple of these guys in the Euro Tour. I'm blanking on the name. It's not coming to me on the spot here, but his name is like Nino or something like that. Anyways, these guys are, you know, they might float without moving if you put them in water, and if you took their clothes off, they might weigh 90 pounds soaking wet. It's such a mechanically driven mm-hmm. thing, and I think we're seeing that more in the LPGA as well. That's an exciting thing to understand, that we have the ability to unlock this piece of ourselves, and that includes both men and women. I think that is going to make the next 5 to 10 years, especially in women's golf, incredibly fun to watch.
I mean, and it like, this is a rabbit hole that we could go on and on down, because like, especially in the women's game, I think the advent of things like, you know, Foresight and TrackMan and all these have played a big role in that technique, right? Because in the past, where it was, we'll watch you hit a golf ball and I'll record you on video and we'll do this. Now we can make you change something and you can see the numbers change. So you can fight for that optimal, you know, body angle, whatever else it is, for all of them on both sides. And mm-hmm. and just, but again, like the athleticism, I can't emphasize to people enough, like what is coming, like what we have right now is athletic. What is coming is even more athletic. And that's like, to me, that's fun. Like, I want to see it. Let's go. Like, put on a show. I think it's good for both sides.
I love it. And it'll be fun to see how that translates into junior golf as well. I mean, you see it firsthand mm-hmm. with the way these young women go about their game and the approach to how they, you know, construct their swing and what they're going to go for the next decade of their playing life. That's got to be super cool. And I'm certainly jealous of you, your position there with all that. And obviously, huge congrats to both your teams. And you know, I'll be rooting big time for you as you close in on the finals. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you just want some free swag.
Well, yeah. Make sure it's got Coach Dan on it.
No, I appreciate it. It's fun. Like it's another passion, and it's cool. It's different. It's hard. It's good. It's rewarding. It's all those things.
James, I'm going to give you an option here. We're either going to make this a long episode, we're going to talk about answers, bunker troubles, or we're going to go straight to the Ask Dan questions section. What do you think?
I want to talk about answer.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay.
So, answer got docked two short penalty for touching the sand. Some people would argue grains. I called it a clump. I was told that it was very generous of calling it a clump. We reviewed the footage prior to the show, so you could kind of talk with me about it. What's your perspective on what happened to him, and do you think it's fair?
I mean, I think that there's a chance where he really genuinely didn't know what was going on or what happened to it? There's got to be a chance. There's always a chance. But like it or not, when you can look at it, like I can't get over, I don't know why he would hover the club that close to the ground in the trap, knowing those things could happen. I just don't know. Other than he had to have seen it behind the ball before he hit. I don't know.
That's my big takeaway. And I joked around with a couple guys. We were locked by rain this Sunday, couldn't play. So we settled for breakfast at the club and we were talking about, and I said to him, these are middle-aged men. I said, listen, how many times have you hit a bunker shot? And these are, you know, somewhere between 2 and 12 handicaps. I said, you ever go into a bunker when you're trying to win money or win a tournament and not take a look at your lie and see what's going on around it? So 99.999% of the time, you are going to be incredibly cognizant of what is around that golf ball. To make a claim that he didn't see a clump of sand behind the ball, in my perspective, is lunacy. I fully, wholeheartedly believe it was there. I think it was a lapse of judgment and maybe a slight jitter that put him down there. We're all guilty of it. We've been guilty of it. the question is, did he see it? I don't want to put it on him to say he did, because obviously that's 1.3C or B or whatever it is, which would be automatic disqualification. You know, the speed at which he went back and came through, I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt. But to all the critics out there who are saying he shouldn't have been penalized for it, he broke the rules of golf. There's no way around it. It's incredibly visible when you watch it. Should that be a penalty?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't understand that argument of it all. Like the only argument I rationalize is the fact that good that he wasn't disqualified. Instead, he took the penalty. Mm-hmm. Like I think it's fair. Like it's interesting in the age. Well, which we've gotten rid of a lot of the call in, like the call in thing changed. But you remember the era of all that and everything. Like, it used to be the biggest thing to try to nitpick these things. And well, that's a penalty. Well, then what he did here was a penalty. It just was, like, regardless of intent, regardless of whatever else. I mean, it happened.
Do you know if anyone actually came out and said who flagged it? Because Augusta said it was flagged. They went back to the video to review it and confirmed. And I don't believe it was. I believe it was someone in play or in.
Yeah. It had to be on the grounds.
Yeah. I don't think it was like a call in or anything like that.
No, it had to be on the grounds.
And I'm very much for protecting the players of things they can't see. I respect the idea of that. I think what happened to Norquist back in the day was such an unfortunate thing. And there's absolutely no way outside of that one particular camera angle that anyone would have ever seen it. But I do think this is a different situation.
I agree. I agree.
And regardless, here's what I get so stuck on, James, because you see people act however they want to when their ball's in the rough. Oh, I'm going to test my 6-iron. Then I'm going to test my 7-iron right behind the ball. Well, somehow that's become legal on the tour, even though it's not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. If they create any sort of gray area in the sand, what's stopping them from going full Patrick Reed in the bunker and, you know, testing different clubs? Like, there has to be that absolute there in a thing like a bunker. Otherwise, you're going to get players taking full advantage.
Well, I mean, I totally agree. I'm also of the mind that I think we need to stop raking bunkers.
Savage.
I just am. Like, if we're going to play it that way, it is what it is. But
what you're saying is rake mine, not theirs.
I mean, that works. I'm good with that.
Well, I'd love to hear what everyone else thinks about it. Obviously, we've had our chats on social about it. Had a great conversation on the THP forum about it as well. But I mean, is there a solution moving forward that supports and avoids these sort of conflicts?
I mean, I don't think so, because somebody's always going to think they're taking a higher ground.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's unfortunate. And that's, so we're going to have these conversations as far as it goes. But in the end, the rule's the rule.
That is my thought. And I'm thrilled that he wasn't disqualified. But can I say, how stupid is it? And I'm going to say stupid because that's an aggressive word. How ridiculously stupid is it that players still sign their scorecards in 2021?
Yeah, the things that it's the, my prime example of, we do things the way we do them because they're the way we've always done them.
Right. It is such a ridiculous concept. and the guy sitting beside him is like, I hope he wrote down a 6 when it was actually a 7, you know. That would be great for my standing in the event that we played in. That's such a silly thing, and I hope maybe sometime soon that changes. But yeah, that about wraps it up, my friend. Do you have anything?
I have a question.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I have a question.
Not get Corey Connors donut.
I have seen a video.
Uh-oh.
And I want to know what kind of a patient or non-patient golf coach is Coach Dan with his son.
Oh, you saw, dude, that might be the most liked picture. I've got a little bit of a story for that. A couple years ago, I got put on blast by family members and a little bit by my wife because my top 9 liked photos were all either me playing golf or me with my son Calvin for the year. So I started early January 1, took a picture with wife, and said, everyone please like this so I can get away next year. So this one went nuts. And it's, first of all, I took my kid out And it's been a while since we'd actually been able to golf. COVID made things really hard to get out there. Whatever. He's now five, a little bit older than five. We go out there and James, I'm not kidding you. I was enthralled by the way he was hitting golf balls. It got to the point where I was busy watching him and not even the ball. I would just tee it up and watch him react because he's just pumping these balls out there. I'm like, he starts getting a blister. I said, buddy, you want to stop? He goes, no, it hurts, but I'm fine. Let's keep going. I'm like, yeah, buddy. Yeah. We're going to suffer later, but it's cool. I love that you're into it. And yeah, that kid can pump, man. So I think it's time for dad to retire from playing golf and just fully commit to like Woodsy and coach style. No, that's a terrible idea.
No, don't be Earl.
I'll tell you, and I'm bragging, which is why I took this long to answer that question. I'll tell you that I'm not a great baseball dad and definitely would not make a good coach. I need to relax and step away. run to second. What are you doing? He's five, Dan. He's five. But when it comes to golf, I think my goal is to make sure he's having a great time all the way through. We need to see the bigger picture here, that golf is an opportunity to better ourselves, both emotionally and just in general. It is a thrill to be able to do it. We're incredibly fortunate to be able to play. And I want to push that mentality on him to make sure that he's getting everything out of it that I might not have at the time when I was playing hockey and golf at the same time. And one was pure aggression, and I'm sure you can play
yep. football. Yep.
And one is just controlling your emotions. So yeah, I think I'm gonna write something down for myself and remind myself every time I go out there with them that that's the mentality I want him to have. So yeah.
Hey, the greatest thing, and me starting to coach my kids, the greatest thing that I was ever told, and it stands true, is whenever they're out there, take it to the moment where they're having the absolute most fun, and then go home.
And they go home.
Yep.
I try.
And then they'll always love. Then they'll always love the game. Then they'll always love the game.
We're staying. And then there was lightning, and I was like, "All right, we're leaving.
We're done. We're done. We're out of here."
Do you, sir? Thank you for bringing that up, man.
Yeah.
What a thrill!
I thought that was awesome. Yeah.
Anything else for me before we go?
No, man, it was a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
I love doing this. We've had some pretty intense discussions here lately on the Off Course podcast, but it is always super fun to get out there and just talk about stuff, talk about what you'd call golf current events, and always great to have you a part of it, my friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, everyone out there, I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, that's JMan_THP on Twitter. Go give him some love. I think you have an Instagram page for your golf team, don't you?
I have an Instagram page. It's at Cushing Tiger Golf. Yep.
At Cushing Tiger Golf. Go give him some love as they go into the playoffs here, whatever you want to call it. And if you folks are playing golf this week, please have a great time. Play well and tell me how you shot. See you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.